listening to the Diplomats podcast on Asian geopolitics. I'm your host, Ankit Panda, and I'm joined today by Shannon Tiazi, our managing editor here at the Diplomat, who also writes on China for us, and a special guest, Joel Witt. We're happy to have Joel back on the podcast after nearly 10 months. Joel is a senior fellow at the U.S.-Korea Institute at the School for Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins University, and is also the founder and editor of 38 North, an excellent resource on North Korea. An internationally recognized expert on Northeast Asian security issues and nonproliferation, Joel has 25 years of experience in the U.S. State Department and the Washington think tank arena, and we're really happy to have him on today. Joel, it's good to have you back. Thanks for coming on today.
Happy to be here.
Now, on at 10:30 a.m. local time on January 6th, North Korea tested a nuclear device, one that it claimed was a fully staged hydrogen bomb, but that most experts I've spoken to and read suggest is, at best, a boosted fission device. Pyongyang's nuclear tests, particularly the two in the era of Kim Jong-un, suggest that the international approach and the U.S. approach to denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula have essentially failed or are not working. Now, Joel, as someone with a lot of experience in this area, what, in your view, can the United States do about North Korea at this point?
Well, as everyone knows, it's becoming more and more of a difficult issue. And I would say over the past 5 or 6 years, it's become increasingly difficult to figure out how to deal with North Korea because their program has continued to advance despite what the U.S. and its allies have tried to do. And, you know, in retrospect, I would say that many of us were telling the administration that the policy of strategic patience was not going to work, and our advice was rejected. So now we are where we are. And so what should we do now? Well, that's a difficult question, as I said. I think, first of all, a tough response to the recent test is warranted. I mean, we have to show North Korea that we mean business. But secondly, we really need to take a step back, and after the dust settles, we need to give some thought to a long-term strategy of how to deal with North Korea. And I think the problem is whenever something like this happens, we have sort of a short-term tactical response, the uproar dies down, and then we go back to business as usual, which is exactly what the North Koreans are counting on.
Now, when you say a short-term tactical response, we've seen, you know, a B-52 flyover over South Korea, the suggestion of new sanctions. Are these what you mean by a tactical response?
Absolutely. You know, nothing that is happening now would surprise anyone who's followed this issue. This is what we do after they conduct a nuclear test.
So what would be a tactical way to show the North Koreans that the United States means business, as you said?
Well, I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing these things. I think we should. Mm-hmm. We should do these things, but then we need a strategy. We don't do these things and then kind of say, okay, we've taken care of the problem. Let's go back to business as usual. That's not what we should be doing. And quite frankly, I think all the signs are that we will do it that way, that attention will go away. The administration will go back to dealing with other problems that it has. And there are a lot of them. There's no doubt about that. And this one will be handled by mid-level bureaucrats and certainly in Washington, but also in our allied countries.
Do you think it's time for the conversation in Washington on North Korea to shift from prevention to containment? I know some other commentators have been suggesting that. What's your thought on that?
You know, that's what strategic patience was all about. Strategic patience was basically containment and waiting for the North Koreans to come to the negotiating table because they would feel the pressure from that containment. And it hasn't worked. It didn't work in the past, and it's not going to work in the future. The problem's only going to get worse and worse and worse. So we do need to explore alternatives. There's no guarantee that any of the alternatives will work, but I can certainly guarantee that strategic patience and containment will not work.
Right.
So that's the dilemma.
I guess when I said containment, I actually was referring to, the idea of essentially accepting the fact that the North Koreans have nuclear weapons and are essentially a de facto nuclear state, even if South Korea and the United States won't acknowledge that. That might be the new reality. Do you think it's time to shift the conversation to acknowledging the fact that the North Koreans have nuclear weapons and containing that problem?
Well, yeah, I mean, now we're really getting into a very nuanced discussion. I don't know anyone who doesn't think the North Koreans have nuclear weapons at this point, but I take your point. Governments can't really acknowledge that. And every time a U.S. official talks about this issue, or Japanese or South Korean, they all say, we will not allow North Korea to have nuclear weapons. Well, they do have nuclear weapons, and so it's almost comical at this point. So, in that sense, I think we do need to shift what we're saying publicly, and then to get down to business and think about how to deal with a group of people, a country that is very serious about what it's doing and has a long-term strategy.
I want to get your thoughts on a recent argument that I read by William Perry, Bill Clinton's Secretary of Defense during the era of the Agreed Framework in the 90s. And he essentially endorsed Siegfried Hecker's three no's on North Korea. And just for our listeners that might not be familiar with that, Siegfried Hecker at Stanford, who he was inside the Yongbyon uranium enrichment facility, has a very good sense of the North Korean nuclear program, at least as recently as 2010, suggested that one framework could be that we say that North Korea, we can negotiate with North Korea, but the three no's that they would have to accept are no new weapons, no better weapons, and no transfer of nuclear technology or weapons. Now, Joel, what's your sense of that? Is that a reasonable framework for the nuclear containment conversation in Washington today?
Yeah, I don't like this word containment, although
Okay.
you're right. In principle, that first step, hopefully just the first step in a process, would essentially contain North Korea's nuclear weapons program. But I don't think anyone who's in a position of authority can basically say, my goal is to contain North Korea's nuclear program. You can't really say that because, in effect, you're accepting it then. You are de facto accepting that they are a nuclear weapons state. So the conversation has to be framed differently. And the conversation is, denuclearization is our objective and will always be our objective. But there hasn't been a country in the history of the world who has denuclearized in an instant. It always takes time. So, depending on which country we're talking about, it could take less time or more time. In the case of North Korea, it's going to take more time now because for the past 5 years, they've been sprinting to this finish line where they will be a small nuclear power. So, I think that's the way you need to frame the conversation. And I agree with Sig, but the way he's framing it really isn't politically sensitive.
At this point, I want to pass it over to Shannon to kind of steer this conversation a little bit towards the China angle. China, as we know, has historically been North Korea's greatest ally and benefactor, and with any, international policy approach to the issue of nuclearization on the Korean Peninsula, China will play an important role. So, Shannon, do you want to maybe take this over for China?
Sure. So a lot of people have been emphasizing that if China doesn't get serious about North Korea, meaning agreeing to tougher sanctions that are going to have more of an impact on the North Korean regime, then you can't get anywhere with sanctions. And from what I've been seeing coming out of Beijing, it doesn't seem like there's any indication that they're willing to do that. They're talking about all parties need to have restraint. They're talking about the six-party talks is the only way to address this issue. In one of the press conferences, the foreign ministry spokesperson actually said it takes two to tango when asked about how to deal with North Korea's nuclear program, very much implying that the US and South Korea are just as much to blame as the North Koreans, which is kind of the historic position from Beijing. So, Joel, if we're not seeing any sign of a shift in position from China, what options does the US realistically have in trying to foster change in North Korea's nuclear program?
Well, let me make a couple of points here. The first point is it's very clear that the administration doesn't really have a strategy for dealing with China. And this goes to the initial point I made that we need a long-term strategy. When the Secretary of State comes out to the daily press briefing, attacks China for not doing enough, leaves the briefing, he does it publicly, well, what are the Chinese going to do? They're not going to back down after being attacked publicly. So I think that was a big mistake. That's just a sign of not having a strategy. It's difficult. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years. Of course, it's difficult to get Chinese cooperation, but all roads are going to lead to Beijing in terms of putting pressure on North Korea. The way you try to nudge China out of where it is by putting together a strategy that both confronts them with the possibility of unacceptable consequences if they don't go along with us, but also addresses their concern about the lack of dialogue, the lack of this being a two-way street. And that means, of course, the dirty word in Washington, which is diplomacy. We need to have something new on the diplomatic front, but also to start to unveil measures that the Chinese are going to find, you know, pretty unacceptable. And that's going to take a little bit of risk on our part, because we may have to play a little bit of chicken with the Chinese.
To what extent do you think this is simply a question of priorities? Because when the U.S. is really trying to convince the Chinese to change their behavior, they've been focusing a lot more on cyber issues, the South China Sea, more recently climate change. So to what extent do you think the Obama administration would have more luck if they just moved North Korea to the top of their priority list?
You know, that is an excellent question, because it's very clear to everyone, except in the immediate aftermath of a nuclear test, it's very clear to everyone that this issue is not a priority for Washington in its relationship with China. As you've mentioned, there are a whole bunch of other issues, including the South China Sea. I honestly don't understand why the South China Sea is more important to us than having a growing nuclear weapons state next door to two major allies in the Pacific region. I don't get that. So that's the problem. We need to raise this as a priority in our relationship with the Chinese. And believe you me, the North Koreans and the Chinese understand that there may be this initial uproar. I don't know how long it'll go on. You know, you'll have B-52 flights, you'll have UN sanctions, but then after a while, everything will die down and it'll be back to business as usual. So they understand that perfectly. And what we need to do is to change that equation.
Now, China's approach is still very centered on the six-party talks. We need to restart the six-party talks. That format has been dead since Obama took office, and even longer, really. So do you think there's any realistic sense that the six-party talks could be revived to play a meaningful role in this?
Well, yeah, they could, I guess, you know, but I think the six-party talks have been and could continue to be, you know, a forum where interested countries can gather and learn what's going on. I don't see them as a negotiating forum. But there's another approach here, which once again involves the dirty D word. And that is that the United States basically says to China, fine, we're going to move forward with solving this problem through diplomacy. We're not really interested in the six-party talks anymore. We're going to approach Pyongyang bilaterally. We're going to talk to them, and we'll keep you informed. And I'm willing to bet the Chinese will not be happy about that, but it'll be an unhappiness which I would hope would nudge them in our direction in terms of supporting what we're doing, because at the end of the day, they will support diplomatic initiatives towards North Korea.
Now, thanks a lot for that, Shannon. Obviously, yeah, China is kind of a complicated factor here, and there really is no obvious way to address the issue. Joel, I do want to, go back to the report that you'd co-authored last year that we discussed on North Korea's nuclear futures. And I do want to ask you, after this latest test, what is your prognosis of the direction of North Korea's nuclear program? I know that this conversation has mostly been focused on the policy side of things, but on the technical side, what should we be looking out to see from North Korea in the coming years?
Well, of course, that's a big question. So let's just focus on qualitative improvements for a moment in their nuclear weapons arsenal. As you know, the North Koreans claim they tested an H-bomb. Well, I don't think that's really true, and I don't think anyone else really believes it. But they're a step short of that you would take as you move down the path to developing a simple H-bomb and then a more complicated H-bomb. And this could very well be the first step down that path. It's called, in technical jargon, a boosted nuclear weapon, which means you use special nuclear materials to increase the yield of the weapon. I think we did mention this in the report. And in addition to that, we did talk about the possibility of North Korea developing an H-bomb in the future. And the projection was that they could develop a simple H-bomb by about 2020 and then a more complicated one afterwards. So, I don't know how much further the North Koreans will go down this road, but they're certainly starting down that path. And in addition to that, of course, we all know that their fissile material stockpile is growing, and so is their nuclear weapons arsenal.
Right. Well, Joel, thank you very much for coming on the podcast and talking through some of these issues today.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And if you like this podcast, please do leave us a rating on iTunes and stay tuned for more from us at The Diplomat. Thank you.